This King Prithu will be very, very kind to all the citizens. Even though a poor person may trample over the king's head by violating the rules and regulations, the king, out of his causeless mercy, will be forgetful and forgiving. As a protector of the world, he will be as tolerant as the earth itself. Also you say, this King Prithu will be very, very kind to all the citizens. Even though a poor person may trample over the king's head by violating the rules and regulations, the king, out of his causeless mercy, will be forgetful and forgiving. As a protector of the world, he will be as tolerant as the earth itself. Prabhupada's purport. King Prithu is herein compared to the earthly planet as far as his tolerance is concerned. Although the earth is always trampled upon by men and animals, it still gives food to them by producing grains, fruits, and vegetables. As an ideal king, Marj Prithu is compared to the earthly planet, for even though some of the citizens might violate the rules and regulations of the state, he would still be tolerant and maintain them with fruits and grains. In other words, it is the duty of the king to look after the comforts of the citizens, even at the cost of his own personal convenience. This is not the case, however, in Kali Yuga. For in Kali Yuga, the kings and heads of state enjoy life at the cost of the taxes exacted from the citizens. Such unfair taxation makes the people dishonest, and the people try to hide their income in so many ways. Eventually, the state will not be able to collect taxes, and consequently, it will not be able to meet the huge military and administrative expenses. Everything will collapse, and there will be chaos and disturbance all over the state. Om Aginata Maranda Siha Gina Gina Silakaya Jakshushumilitangina Tazari Shi Gurave Namaha. When I was a new bhakta, of course I'm still a bhakta, but that's another story. Prabhupada was on a radio station in Los Angeles, and this man was trying to find some fault and just couldn't get the whole thing. And Prabhupada was answering, of course, very sublimely and peacefully. Finally, the man became upset, and he said, in exasperation, what if the whole world became Krishna conscious? Prabhupada said, don't worry, there'll always be fools like you who won't. Although Prabhupada told us later on, he said that I can say this, but you cannot. He said it's the special dispensation for old men and little children. They can go anywhere and say anything. So Prabhupada, this is off the track, but we had when I was a Sankirtan devotee in a brahmachari in Detroit, we would get from the temple president the verse of the day, and we would go out and preach on that verse, you know? That was the strategy in those days. So the verse was Avajante Mam Mudha, that was the verse. And all over downtown Detroit, you saw devotees, you know, they'd have some businessman by the tie, and you knew what the devotee was saying, just letting him have it, you know? So Prabhupada can do this, we cannot. But the point here is an example what happens if the world, if someone becomes Krishna conscious. Because we're talking about political leaders, we're talking about the head of a state here, and of course I'm coming from America, we've just had an election. Character counts. The presentation nowadays is that, and we'll talk a little bit something else about character too, but the presentation is, if the person is competent, whatever he may be in his private life, that's another thing. But if he knows the job, if he's competent, then that's the criteria. So they're separating character from what they call competence. But the real thing is that here we see that unless the person has character, good qualities, then they can lead. From that, everything flows. And Prabhupada gives a nice example. Actually, this one comes from Hiranyaka Maharaj, then I'll give Prabhupada's example. But there's a section in the Bhagavatam, and I forget the run-up to it, but I think this was one of those kings who wanted to go to the heavenly planets in his self-same body. So he went to approach this particular sage and said, can you perform this jagan? And the sage said, this is ridiculous, the material body, why do you want to go to the heavenly planets in the self-same body? And he wouldn't have anything to do with it. So the king was determined in his effort, and he went to the sons of the sage And he said, you know, can you do this? And they said, how will we do what our father wouldn't do? Our father thought it was foolish, and now you're asking us to do the same foolish thing? No, we're obedient sons. We're not going to do that. We take direction from our father. But to be kind to the man, they're seeing his determination, they said, but I know one sage who will do this for you. And the way they knew the sage would do it was this. The one of the sons described, he said, I was walking in the forest one day with this fellow sage, and some fruit had fallen on the ground, like picture a mango had fallen on the ground. Now it had rotted a little bit on one side, but the top side, the guy thought, oh, it's still good. So he ate the fruit. And the son of the sage, he concluded that someone who will not discriminate in what they're eating, in other words, he was eating an unclean thing. And if someone won't discriminate in one area, they won't discriminate in another area. So he said, as he wouldn't discriminate in what he was eating, he also won't discriminate in doing this jugger for you. You pay him enough, he'll do it. So it's not that one can be unscrupulous in one category and be scrupulous in another category. It becomes the woof and weave, or the very character, the very fiber of one's being. So, and Prabhupada gave an example. Prabhupada said when he was a, and you all know the example, when Prabhupada was a young man, he was working for Dr. Bose's laboratories, as they say here. And they were interviewing two people. And one man came, had all the qualifications. And Dr. Bose interviewed him. Prabhupada was observing, said, fine, okay, fine. We'll let you know. Another man came, didn't have the qualifications. Intelligent, energetic young man, but didn't have all the, you know, CV, all the list of qualifications. And yet Dr. Bose hired the man who didn't have the material qualifications. Does anyone know why he chose the one man over the other? The guy closed the door. And he could understand that this man is responsible. And he said, everything else I can teach. All the details of the job. If he has good character, you know, if you burn sweet rice, there's nothing you can do about it. You can add, as we've all tried, you can add cardamom, you can add cinnamon, you can add carob, you can toss it, whatever. But if it's burnt, it's burnt. Forget it, you know. So what is the character of the person? So there's a nice example that Chanakapanta gives, that the spoon is in the middle of the soup, but it cannot taste it. You follow? Just picture you're stirring the soup. Soup's right in the middle of the spoon's right in the middle of the whole thing, and yet it has no experience of the soup. The whole civilization, the whole focus, everything that's on the telly is advertised at adjusting the conditions. How to adjust the conditions in this world. If I adjust the right conditions, I'll become happy. But the fact of the matter is that we cannot control conditions, and conditions don't determine one's happiness. What determines one's happiness is consciousness. We can't control conditions, although we're trying adamantly. But the fact of the matter is we can't. There's a guy in University of California, San Diego. His field was life extension. He's a top biologist. He was in line for getting a Nobel Peace Prize. And his idea was that by proper diet, by proper exercise, you could extend life up to 100 years, and even without Alzheimer's, so you'd know you'd lived 100 years. So he was very fond of this. It's a true story. And they did his blood pressure. He was 60 years old. He had the blood pressure of a 40-year-old man and this and that. And he went jogging every day. He was jogging one day and he was hit by a bus and killed. So much for his life extension, you know. The point is that we can't control conditions. But our consciousness, how we experience this world. There was a psychiatrist. He was the chairman of the psychiatry department, University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, Michigan. And he was coming to the temple. And Satsuri Maharaj was visiting, and he was giving the class that evening. And the man, this professor, chairman of the department, top psychologist in America, and he said, can I use your phone, you know, in our little temple office? I said, yeah, sure. And I was getting some papers, I forget, and I couldn't help but hearing the man on the phone. And he was begging his way out of an appointment. He evidently had some appointment scheduled that night, found out that Satsuri Maharaj was speaking on Bhagavad Gita and wanted to hear the Gita class. And the guy was about 45 years old. So he was saying, no, you don't understand. I have to hear from my psychiatrist. Although he was the chairman of the psychiatry department, he considered hearing Bhagavad Gita was the best psychiatry. And he was explaining to me, he said, this explanation of the three modes of material nature is the best analysis of human nature I have experienced anywhere in the world. So the point is, I had a friend who became a devotee, and he used to have three sets of glasses, dark glasses. And according, this is the hippie days. According to his mood, he had one red pair, one blue pair, one yellow pair. I swear to you. And when he'd wake up in the morning, he would say, oh, how do I feel blue? So he put on his blue, you know. And, you know, it affects, you know, how you're seeing the world. It affected him. And if he felt bright and cheery, he'd put on the yellow. If he felt, you know, too cool for you, he'd put on his red, you know, according to his mood. But the fact of the matter is that according to the modes of nature, we are experiencing this world. And it's the same person in the same conditions can be experiencing the same thing. I was driving with Kirtananda Maharaj one time. We were in Mexico. And they were selling iguanas. You know what iguana is? It's a big lizard. Nasty looking thing. Big lizards. And different people were stopping and buying these lizards. So I think we stopped to do something, change drivers or whatever. So I asked one guy, why were you buying it? There was one group, they were saying, we're buying for, you know, a pet. We're going to take, they were orange and green, and we're buying it for a pet. So that was sort of the mode of passion I was thinking. And another group, why were they buying it? They were buying it to eat it, cook it up. So the mode of ignorance. And, you know, we were thinking, oh, give the thing some prasadam, you know, poor thing, Hare Krishna. So it's a little, you know, divya jnana or transcendental goodness. So same, I mean, it's a simple example, but the same thing experienced according to the modes of material nature, completely different experience. So our simple point is that if we want to manifest, Prabhupada was saying, Prabhupada went on to explain that, because I started in the beginning, what happens if the whole world became Krishna conscious? And Prabhupada went on to explain, Prabhupada said on the radio to the whole citizens of Los Angeles, the weather would never go below 70 degrees. Every tree would give a fruit and a flower. He began describing Satya Yuga, what would happen if everyone was chanting Hare Krishna. So at least for ourselves, these qualities, here it's describing how to become very, very kind. Generally speaking, people will accept kindness as a good quality. But how can you actually be very, very kind? Well, one of the first things is you have to be Atmaram. You have to be self-satisfied. Prabhupada gave a nice example. I guess I'll say it this way. When I first became a devotee, my parents completely unraveled. My mother sat across the street from the temple and said she was going to fast until she died if I didn't come back. So I was a young man. You know, my parents were good parents materially. I was feeling maybe I should go back. Vishnu John Marsh saved me. Vishnu John Marsh said, if you go back, become the perfect son, win the Nobel Peace Prize, get an Oscar, you know, become president of the United States, your inaugural address, you say, I owe it all to my mother. You know, be the perfect son. She's going to die at some point in time. You're going to die. And where is she going to go? And where are you going to go? That the whole world is flowing by in the stream of the river of names. It's all flowing by. And unless somebody has to be on solid ground, if someone is, you know how they do it, if someone's out in the river drowning, you have to be on solid ground and throw them a rope. You can't just jump in the river also, you'll also drown. Someone has to be on solid ground. So if we're going to be kind to people, we have to be satisfied ourselves. You have to be, Prabhupada tells a story of, I think it was Alexander the Great, came down, you know, for Hindu Kush, came into the whatever. And actually, it's a historical event. They have, I'm just thinking, how long does class go till? Oh, really? Okay. Well, I will tell the story then. There's a famous historian who used to travel with Alexander the Great, and I forget his name. But they accept him as a valid historian. Because, you know, based on his records, they found this city. He said there was some huge city here. And then many years later, they did survey. You know, thousands of years later, they dug under the ground. And there this city was. They accept his record as a historical record. He traveled with Alexander the Great. So he described when they came down into India, there was one place that they wanted to cross this hermitage. And they said there was some sage, saffron-dressed sage. And the sage said, you know, can you just go to the left? You know, that all of our gardens are here. You have a nice picture, nice ashram, hermitage. We're way off the track. But I was walking with Prabhupada in a morning walk in Chicago. And Prabhupada was walking through it's called Lakeshore Park. And the bathrooms were designed like little, they looked like little Tudor houses like this, little thatched houses. You know, that was, so Prabhupada was walking and he saw one of these. He threw his chadar and said, "What sage is living here?" And he cried, I guess it looked like a little hermitage. Like Prabhupada was going to go greet Augusta Moon. He said, no, Prabhupada, that's the bathroom. Prabhupada got back on the path and went the other way, you know. But you can imagine a little hermitage and the nice gardens and flowers and everything. So the sadhu, the head of the ashram, the Guru Maharaj, he says, the whole Alexander the Great's army is there. He says, you know, can you just go to the left? Please don't come here and trample all of our gardens. And the general said, you know, we are the army of Alexander the Great. We don't turn left. We don't turn right. We go, you know, we just go where we want to go. And it's described in this man's record that the sage, it said, held up his staff. So it must have a danda. And from his danda, you know, lions, tigers, flames, smoke, you know, just, and the whole army was just stopped. He said, okay, we'll go around, you know. But the point I was going to make, the story Prabhupada tells, Prabhupada says with Alexander the Great coming like that, so the man said, Alexander the Great saw some sadhu and said, you know, what can I give you? I am Alexander the Great. And it's the nature of a king to give, you know. So let me give you land, cows, whatever you want. So the sage looked up and said, well, you could move out of my sun. In other words, he's sitting in the morning sun and thinking, what can this fool offer me? You know, I'm just sitting here. He's probably saying Gayatri. Just out of the, you can move out of the way. Let me get a little nice morning sun. So if one is actually, one of the benefits of becoming Krishna conscious, if one is actually self-satisfied, Prabhupada said, anyone know what death for a sannyasi is? If someone goes to one's house, Prabhupada said two things, death to a sannyasi. If he thinks, oh, I could have had a nice house like this, or I used to have a nice house like this, you know, either way, and I gave it up. Or if he thinks, oh, see how nicely his wife is serving him. I used to have a nice wife like that, or I could have had a nice, then he's finished. So, no worries. Is it? Gotcha. If one is Atmaram, or self-satisfied, one can actually care for others. If one's actually on that platform. That's one of the benedictions that comes from Krishna consciousness. I was thinking of another. We should remember what we have. In order to be kind to others, we have to be self-satisfied. And one of the ways of being self-satisfied is to appreciate the great gift of Krishna consciousness. I was thinking, of course, the greatest fear is fear of death. And I saw Srila Prabhupada. I didn't see Srila Prabhupada. I talked to Naveen Krishna's father. Now, Naveen Krishna's father was a doctor, a very good doctor in Delhi. And his son contacted him, Prabhupada's last few days in Vrindavan. He said, please, can you go see Srila Prabhupada? Now, Prabhupada had stayed at Dr. Karana's house. So Dr. Karana organized a few other doctors, and they drove down to Vrindavan to see Srila Prabhupada. And Dr. Karana was shocked, because, as you know, at the end, Prabhupada was living on Charnamrita, and his no flesh, just skin and bones. Dr. Karana told me personally, he said that Prabhupada's, because there was no fatty tissue, because Prabhupada wasn't eating anything, the skin was just pressing on the bones, the nerves on the bones. He said an ordinary man would have been writhing in pain. Prabhupada asked for a little massage, but an ordinary man would have been writhing in pain. So he said, and he gathered a few other doctors. They all came in little, you know, white ambassadors, the only car in those days in India, came down and they came to see Srila Prabhupada. When he walked in and saw Prabhupada lying on his bed, he was shocked. Because he's, you know, Prabhupada was like a lion. You felt that Prabhupada could just, you know, could conquer the world. And to see Prabhupada lying like that, just like Bhishma on a bed of arrows, he was shocked. He was actually speechless. And he told me, he said, the amazing thing was, Prabhupada asked him, oh, Dr. Karana, how are you? You've traveled so far. You've come to see me. Dr. Karana asked, how are you? Prabhupada held him his own, like, you know, how am I? What's there to say, you know? But he asked him, have you had your lunch? Have you had any prasadam? Where are you staying? Please take a little prasadam, take a little rest, come back. And Dr. Karana said he was used to going and seeing sick people. And they're always crying for their mother and demanding this and where's the painkillers. And he said, you know, and the doctor is used to offering succor or, you know, shelter or comfort to the patient. And here is Srila Prabhupada in the most distressed condition materially. And he's simply thinking about the well-being of the doctor. He's a gracious host himself. Prabhupada apologized for not being able to get up. Dr. Karana actually began to cry when he told me the story. So Jayadvaita Maharaj told me one time, he said, just as Prabhupada was the acharya in life, he was also the acharya in death, how he left this world. So that which is the greatest fear, Prabhupada conquered. And it's not just Srila Prabhupada. We see that in devotees all the time. I saw Jayananda leave his body. And Jayananda, they had a, you know, we didn't have the iPods and all that. We just had an old, you know, tape player, cassette tape player. And they had Prabhupada chanting japa. And the way he lay, he couldn't move. Cancer just ravished his body. That's a whole other story. But at his very last effort, he lifted his head up. We didn't even know how he did it. He was lying down, and he just put his head right on top of the tape player and left his body. He wanted to get as close to Prabhupada as he possibly could. So, I mean, we've seen devotees. Brahmananda and Pushta Krishna. Brahmananda was sannyasi, and Pushta Krishna was his brahmachari assistant. Prabhupada had sent them into East Bengal. Now it's Bangladesh. And, you know, the whole Bangladesh, 1971, was that whole war, the whole thing flew up, you know, blew up. They were stopping at the border. You know, all the Hindus were fleeing, and they were just being butchered by the Muslims, by the army. They were machine-gunning people. They were stopping buses and taking everyone who looked like a Hindu off and just killing them. So people were fleeing, you know, trying to grow fast beards or, you know, whatever it is, you know, trying to get out of the place. Carry a goat, whatever you can use as a cover. So they stopped the bus. Brahmananda and Pushta Krishna were on it. Prabhupada told them, come to Mayapur, get out. So they were coming. And they were getting close to the border. He stopped the bus, looked at the bus. You know, you look down at everybody's, you know, got a beard and inshallah, inshallah. But in the back, there's saffron cloth, sannyasi, shaved head, done. I mean, just might as well have a bullseye painted right on him. They took him right off the bus, stood him by the side of the bus. It's a true story. Set up the gun, pulled the gun back, and pointed at him, ready to mow him down, which they've been doing to everybody else. And Brahmananda turned to Pushta Krishna and said, put your hand in your bead bag, Prabhu. We're going back to Godhead. And they just put their, like, you know. And they were fearless. They were, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Like, and Brahmananda said, it was kind of funny, because it was like they were having their snaps taken, you know, like a photo, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Hare. And they were thinking, and Pushta Krishna had a boil on his posterior. He said, well, that's what, that'll relieve that problem, you know, get out of this. Yeah, hey, this may be a good deal, you know. And they were so fearless that to the credit of the Muslim soldiers, it unnerved the Muslim soldiers. And they thought, you know, these guys, whatever they may be, they could sense, like Sanatana Goswami and the Muslim jailer, they could sense these people are little, you know, something's going on with these people, they're special. All right, and they let the devotees back on the bus and said, just go like that. So they were saved. But the simple point is that in so many I have the good fortune of having lived long enough, although my knees are going, eyesight is going. So you were reading about Dhritarashtra the other day. I was saying, well, check that box, you know. But when I became a devotee, trying to become a devotee, you know, my whole family thought I'd lost my mind. You know, what's happened to this? You know, they thought I was in a car accident, ruined my back. So my father thought he's never been the same since. So they try to ascribe it to some material cause. But the interesting thing is I'm at the point now where I'm seeing people. What is that? Is it Robert Frost, Two Roads in the Forest, and I took the one less traveled, and that has made all the difference? I forget exactly how it goes, but that's two roads meet, you know. And the poem is that I went this way in life, others have gone the other way in life, you know. So I took one path. I became a devotee. And I've lived long enough to see people who've taken the other path. And I have people coming to me now and telling me, oh, I'll give you an example. My brother-in-law and my sister. My brother-in-law is a school teacher, vice principal of a high school. My sister is a school teacher. And with this whole economic collapse, their entire pension, their retirement from everything has completely dropped through the floor. They were planning on retiring in 2 years. They don't know when they're going to be able to retire. He said, I'm going to have to expire. I'm going to have to work till I drop dead. Forget retire. I'm going to have to expire before I can retire. And he said to me, he said, you know, and everything's gone up in smoke. And he turned to me and said, you know, you might have made the right move joining the Hare Krishna. You know, I said, yeah, I said, I have no pension fund, you know, but I'm going to go back to Godhead. We've got the ultimate retirement benefit, you know. So, but they're beginning to see quality of life. I have another person, you know, he and I were friends or mates, I guess as you say, here in high school. He's been married 3 times. He said, he's made a ton of money, and each wife has taken a large slice. He said, I have a blank form in the drawer. You know, just when I get rid of the next, I just pull the form out, she just signs it, off they go, and I lose half my money, you know? So he said, you might have done the right thing, you know? So my simple point is that in so many ways, we don't have time to measure, but in so many ways, we should consider the great good fortune that we've become devotees. And therefore, in that solid condition, we can actually be kind to others. I was describing to somebody that I worked at a suicide crisis line before I became a devotee. What I actually said, it's true. There's this Coronado Bridge. It's a big bridge in San Diego. And people jump off it to commit suicide. It's a long fall into the bay. And they put up because so many people were jumping. And they've tried to stop them. Into people climb over the rail. They have a net. People figure out where to jump. There's different ways they do it. In case you're interested, which you're not because you're devotees, but there's a sign, a 1-800 number that you can call, you know, if for a suicide crisis, for help. So they put the sign up, but they didn't fund the service. So if you call, you're put on hold. Just imagine the cruel face of the material. You reach out one last time for, you know. So I worked for one of these crisis lines. Just one, it was a summer job, and you know, it was a teenage, they have a teenage crisis, and so it was a teenage thing. So they tell you all these things you say to people, and they say that suicide is a permanent solution to temporary problems. In other words, the problems are going to take care of themselves, but if you kill yourself, you're out of the game. There's nothing you can do about it, you know? It's a permanent step for what was a temporary problem. So they give you a list. So this man called, and I was saying, you know, they give you a list. He said, there's no point in living. And I said, well, you know, at least, you know, there's always tomorrow. You've got your health. He said, no, I've diagnosed terminal cancer. He said, well, you've got your meaning in life. You've got your work. He said, no, I just got fired. I said, well, you've got your family. You know, your family cares. No, my wife divorced me. And he went, after all, there was all 12 items. He'd lost them all. I felt like, where are you? I'll give you a push. You know, because I felt better, you know, better you go. So, but I remember walking out so disappointed because I thought, even if I patch this guy up, it reminded me of like, you know, in a boxing, and the guys, I don't know if they do this in England. We're a little more brutal in America, but they have these fights. If you go 10 rounds, you win. You may not win the fight. You may not be the victor. You may be pulverized. But if you're still standing, you get a percentage of the purse, you know, of the. So, you know, the guy will be just being creamed. But he'll go into, you know, they ring the bell and he goes, and they say, oh, you're doing great, champ. No problem. You know, puts ice on the guy, patches him up, slices his eye so he can see his way back out to the ring. And send the guy, oh, jeez, he just gets, you know. And then they ring the bell and go, oh, you're doing great, champ. Go back. So I felt like even you repair these people, you send them back out into the arena of material nature. The material nature always wins. I was getting my tires changed in my car. And this, you know, one suitor talking to another. The guy said, oh, how you doing? Oh, no, they're just talking. One guy said, oh, I'm just killing time. I don't know if they have that saying here in England, but in America they say killing time. And I thought, no, he's not killing time. Time's just fine. Time's killing him. That's what's happening. So nobody wins in this material world. Everyone, time I am, and Krishna, everything is lost. So even you may materially repair someone, you're not actually, we can't actually give them anything unless you can give someone Krishna consciousness, unless you can solve the real problems. And Prabhupada gives the example of the man who was blind, poverty-stricken, and childless. Okay? Blind, poverty-stricken, and childless. And he's given one wish. I'm waiting, are the curtains coming? Or just now coming? All right. So, does anyone have an answer? What is... Come on. There we go. Agla is radical. So the man is blind, childless, poverty-stricken, and only given one wish. Prabhupada says, you know what he wishes for? He wishes to see his children from the roof of his palace. Got all three. So the real thing is, if people become Krishna conscious, automatically, like I was saying, the soup in the spoon in the soup can't even taste it. If one's consciousness, devotees become happy in any condition. We have seen devotees in very difficult conditions. When my parents came to see how I was living, I was a young householder. And in those days, we all took prasad at the temple. I mean, that was, you know, we went home and slept. And even that, we really didn't sleep much in those days, which explains a lot of some of our activities. We really weren't sleeping much. And probably when you're not sleeping, the intelligence doesn't work quite properly. So, but I remember that my wife had saved some mahaprasad for my parents. So we opened the fridge. And the only thing in the fridge was a little cup with mahaprasadam in it. And my parents were shocked. They thought, we didn't raise you to live like this. And oh my God. And you know, the only furniture we had was a milk crate that we put some, because we didn't even use furniture. But you know, we fancied it up for my parents. So we had a milk crate with a cushion on it. And I remember my father sitting on this milk crate with a cushion and the empty fridge and thinking, you know, what happened, you know? I invested all this time in my son, and this is how he's turned out. You know, he just can't even understand it. So, but we find that the devotee, because he's Krishna conscious, is happy in any condition. And the materialist, in spite of every possible condition, is not happy in any condition. So, who's the victor? So, I also wanted to speak a little bit about tolerance, because it mentions here. We are all infused, certainly speaking for myself, and the general tenor of the society is infused with a false set of expectations. Just like Krishna says, aham bhogi in Bhagavad Gita. We're all expecting, it's like an entitlement that we should have a great time in this world. We expect that we should be happy. The anomaly is unhappiness. Actually, this world, if I just work it out right, this body should be great. If I just work it out right, my material relationships should be. If I just work it out, I just got to live in the right place or get a heater, or, you know, vacations, you know, winter in Spain or whatever it is. If I just work it out right. Ramaswara said to Prabhupada one time, he said, we're serving Krishna. Why is it that things are going smoothly and then all of a sudden we have difficulties? And Ramaswara told me, Prabhupada just began to laugh. Prabhupada said, no, you have it completely backwards. The real thing is, this world is a completely difficult place. There's always chaos. There's always difficulty. There's always disturbance. And only by Krishna's mercy, occasionally things go smoothly. So if we accept Krishna, you know, what do they call you know, devotees are careful. We read, if we have to buy some food stuff outside, you read the ingredients, you know, what does it have in it, you know. I remember being on traveling Sankirtan. I don't know if they have it here. It's Pringles potato chips. It was the only thing it was a codicil, and we didn't have time to cook, you know, whatever, traveling brahmacharis. And I remember looking at the Pringles potato chips and reading the ingredients. And you know, the ingredients are listed, whatever's the greatest quantity is listed first. At least that's how they do it in America. And I remember reading the whole thing, all these different, like, it looked like a chemical chart. And the fifth or sixth item was potatoes. So what the hell is all this other stuff, you know? So where were we going with that? Oh, so you read the ingredients. So you read the ingredients of things. Krishna has given the ingredients on this material world. Krishna made it. It's emanated from him. He says it's temporary and it's full of misery. That's the nature of this place. My mother used to take us as kids. We would go to the beach for a picnic. And, you know, the beach, right? I think your beaches are mostly rocks. Our beaches are sand. So, a sand beach. And I remember my mother would complain. She would say that, well, why is there sand in everything? You know, there's sand in the picnic, the sandwiches, and there's sand. You know, she was complaining about sand everywhere. And I thought, huh? You're at the beach. How will there not be sand? I mean, if you don't want sand, don't go to the beach. I mean, that seems like, even as a kid, that doesn't quite add up, you know? But Prabhupada gives the example, if you wash coal so it won't be black, will you be successful? No, but will you just have to get the right scrubbing element? You know, just go to the local whatever it is and just get the, you know, Ajax double D and it'll do the job. It's the nature of the thing. If we accept part of being tolerant, of being self-satisfied, accept it, it's the nature of this place. This is a difficult place. Prabhupada said to me personally, he said, spiritual movement in a material world, difficult proposal. It's a difficult place. And to be able to get along, so many different people to get along, people we would never, ever associate with. We would cross the street if we saw some of these people. Or they would cross the street if they saw us. We would never get along. And here we are, we're all trying to get along and serve Krishna. On one hand, it's not an easy proposal. So we have a false set of expectations that I should be happy. When we did a study for the beginning of a constitution for ISKCON, which is just now coming, for 20 years now. Of course, England, you don't have a constitution yet, so isn't it? So there it is. We did a search of Manu Samhita, and a basic principle of a constitution is rights. You know, I have inalienable rights that, you know, to human dignity, this, there's a whole list of rights that you have to provide this for me. We did a search of Manu Samhita, law book of mankind, nothing about rights, absolutely nothing. Huh? Is there a big vacuum? Is there a hole there in Manu Samhita? You know what Manu Samhita describes? Because a constitution, one of the elements is relationships between individuals and bodies and how they, you know, mothers to fathers, fathers to sons, individuals of the state, how they all do, how does it all work? Nothing about rights. You know what it describes? We did a word search on another word. You know what word we put in? Duty. Put in the word duty, page after page after page after page. Duty, you have complete control over. I can always do my duty. Prabhupada says, you know, how you greet a guest. And the you Chennai band and this, that. If you can't do that, you this. And Prabhupada said, you at least a sitting place and a glass of water. Prabhupada says, if you can't do that, you can fold your hands and cry. If you're so poverty-stricken that you have nothing. And Prabhupada said, even if you just fold your hands and cry, then the guest will be fully satisfied that you've done the best you can. So in any condition, we can do our duty. What is that? Too much dependence on others ruins the vitality of the self? If you have a society that's simply based on, I have an expectation of a whole set of rights that I'm going to be happy, that this world should be a great place, heaven on earth, then you are, as they say in Southern California, cruising for a bruising. It is not going to happen. And if you accept this material world is a difficult place, this material world, this material body is a bad bargain. I've got a Prabhupada gives a great story about the example of the nature of the mind. You know this one about green coconut kachoris? Evidently, there's a type of kachori that if you make green, there's a type of green coconut chutney that goes with it. And the it's difficult to make, but the combination is very tasty. But it has an adverse reaction. If you eat too many, it causes indigestion. It's a Prabhupada story. So you're sitting down. It's all offered nice Krishna prasadam. And some nice devotee householders, nice program there, and the wife has worked very hard making green coconut kachoris. She says, Prabhu, please have a green coconut kachori. I think, oh, fantastic. And he says, have another. And the mind says, definitely, have another. So you have another. Then she says, please have a Prabhu, have another. And the mind thinks, yeah. Two is an inauspicious, not three. You should take the threes. So, you know, after a while, four, five, six. And you're just a faithful. The mind is giving all good reasons. And you're a faithful servant of Manasa Das. Yes, definitely. The mind is instructing, and I just want to make my mind happy. So whatever you say, I want to make you happy. So very faithfully, you're serving the mind. I know you're a nice brahmacharya. I'm just picking on you because you were in the front there. And Rivati, I don't want to make him mad. I got to ask him a favor later on. So... But after eating all these kachoris, in the middle of the night, oh, horrible stomach ache. And that same mind that you so peacefully, so faithfully tried to serve says, you idiot, why'd you eat so many? So how will you please such an ungrateful master? And if we accept the mind in the sense they're ungrateful masters, let me just, like Prabhupada's advice means, give me a space to lie down, a little prasadam to maintain my life and soul together. Let me chant Hare Krishna. Other than that, let me serve. Just let me serve. If one has that mental state, one is happy in any condition. And then one can manifest the qualities described here. One can be tolerant. We went to hang a picture in Srila Prabhupada's room. Behind Prabhupada's desk, we had a big picture of Lord Nisringadev. Now, you know, Prabhupada liked pictures of Lord Nisringadev, but I don't know what Prabhupada was thinking, but a lot of important guests were coming. So Prabhupada said, that picture you should move over there. And he'd seen a nice picture. And there was no picture of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in his room. So Prabhupada said, bring the picture of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur from the temple room and put it behind my asan in his darshan room. So I was just a Brahmachari walking down the hallway, and our temple president, Govardhan, to my eternal gratitude, said, "Budri, hey, help me. So can we move?" And it was a big picture. I don't see anything as big. Like as big as that square behind Srila. It was a big picture and a heavy, heavy gold frame. So the two of us, you know, we carried this big picture, and we thought Prabhupada was out having, you know, darshan in the garden in Detroit, Devasiddhan Mandir. But we walked in, and Prabhupada was behind his desk. He said, "Oh, Govardhan," I didn't say a peep. Govardhan said, "Oh, Prabhupada, I'm sorry. We didn't know you were here." Prabhupada said, "No, what is that?" So they said, "Well, Prabhupada, we're trying to, you know, you wanted this picture, but we'll come back later when you're not in." Prabhupada said, "No, do it now." So Govardhan, and Prabhupada sitting at his desk, trying to put this picture behind him. You can, this big, heavy picture. So Govardhan said, "Prabhupada, do you want to get up? We don't want to jostle you." Prabhupada was writing in the president. Good. So, you know, Heckel and Jekyll, Abbott and Costello, you know, here we are, you know, this is not going to go well, you know. So we were, and then we saw that it wasn't. And so Govardhan said, again, "Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, we're afraid, you know, do you want to get up?" Prabhupada said, "What?" He said, "For service, you can stand on my head." So that's how Prabhupada, because it says trample, and then that Prabhupada was, and it wasn't artifice. It was genuinely how Prabhupada was feeling. Later on, you know, when Prabhupada was leaving, devotees were all coming, greeting Prabhupada at the airport. Everyone was offering their obeisance, you know, full dandavats, and the whole pranam prayers, everything. So you had, you know, 100 devotees all lying down. You know, no one could get on the Karmis all trying to get off the plane. Everyone's throwing rose water and flour. You know, you can imagine this scene. Just, you know, quite blissful, actually. But the materialists who were trying to get through this crowd to their planes, or, you know, it was just about to blow. It was, somebody was going to haul off and whack somebody. You know, it was just about to happen. So Rupa Nuga stood up. Prabhupada was waiting for his plane. He said, "All ISKCON devotees, all ISKCON devotees, please clear the airport." The only devotee to get up was Srila Prabhupada. Everybody else, completely. Here's Rupa Nuga, the chairman of the GBC, making an announcement. Ah, nobody. And Srila Prabhupada thought, "Oh, my GBC is making an, you know, chair." Prabhupada, he picked up his little bag and he said, "No, no, Prabhupada, you can stay, you know, you sit." So in so many ways, how Prabhupada was tolerant, how he was kind, how he was merciful, how he was tolerant, fearless, all because he was Krishna conscious. So if we want to make the world a better place, first we have to become Krishna conscious. And when we appreciate what we've actually received, then we can completely give that to others. They don't have anything they can give us. I mean, there's intelligent people can do nice service and so many things. And we know we shouldn't be arrogant, no doubt about it. Prabhupada was speaking in Paris, and middle, you know, Prabhupada was not one to pull punches. And it's in the middle of that communist student revolution, and they were, you know, there was that whole summer. I think, I don't know what year it was, but they were burning the street. It was, you know, the Communist Party got 49% of the vote or whatever it was in France. Huh? I don't know if it was, I think it was later than 68, but. Oh, well, this was all right. Oh, they're French. It's vacation time, what to do. So, I met a guy who was French-Irish. That was a real, with red hair. That was, I was very careful when I dealt with him. But the point is, Prabhupada was describing Varnashram Dharma, and there's, Prabhupada saying there's four classes of men. Now, you can imagine the communist student revolution, you know, four types of men. And you can hear on the tape, this guy stands up and just goes off on Srila Prabhupada. And he's saying, you know, "You're saying this and you're saying that, and how, you know, this is bourgeoisie, exploitation. And I suppose you think," and when you hear him saying, "I suppose you think you're first class. I suppose you think you're first class." And you hear Prabhupada say, "No." And you can hear a pin drop. Prabhupada just shut him up. Prabhupada said, "I am fifth class. I'm servant of all the other classes." And the Prabhupada said, it was so obvious that Prabhupada, that is exactly how Prabhupada felt. The man just sat down. And then you can hear a moment of pause, and there's the whole audience bursts into applause. And it's the fact. So if you want to organize a society, the fact of the matter is they don't have anything, and we have Krishna. And if we have Krishna and we become Krishna conscious, everything else is solved. So we can end there. And I think we're right on time. So we should actually bail without questions. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you, Hare Krishna. I should say one thing. that this is the first time I've ever been to the manor. Krishna's been kind on you. I've been to Soho Street a couple times, but finally my pious activities were enough that I was able to come to the manor. And when I left San Diego, I spend 50% of my time in San Diego, where the sun is always shining. We also have earthquakes, drive-by shootings, tidal waves, so, you know. It's, huh? Huge forest fires, thank you very much. But it was beautiful, beautiful sunny sky and about 70 degrees when I left. Birds were twittering in the trees. And when I arrived here, this is cold for me, you know. But I can tell you, the effulgent atmosphere of the warmth of the devotees and the energetic preaching and the beautiful deities, it is sunnier than San Diego. So thank you very much, Hare Krishna.